welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 45. We are here at Loggly HQ with Cord Campbell, the founder and CEO of Loggly. Hi, Cord.
Howdy.
And also Rafael Marti, the founder and COO of Loggly. Hi, Rafael.
Hello.
So great to be here. Thanks for hosting the show at your office this time.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
I'm Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. We'll jump right into the industry news, a couple of small items, and then we'll get into the guest Q&A. DimDim, one of my favorite web presentation services, was just purchased by Salesforce. It wasn't a huge deal, 30-something million. But Salesforce is on a streak. They bought Heroku, a very popular Ruby on Rails platform as a service venture. And then my favorite little presentation service, DimDim. So I wonder, I wonder if my next favorite tool is going to be acquired. Did either of you guys use DimDim at all?
I have not used DimDim.
It was great. I hope they don't change it. So if anybody's listening, just let it be. Other minor news, Cloudera finally becoming a big sponsor of Apache. Not really a big surprise, given that Doug Cutting, the creator of Hadoop, is also lead of the Apache board or what have you. So I don't think there was really...
that one makes sense.
Anything unexpected there. Some major, major investments going on in social networking and group buying. Facebook and Groupon I'm referring to specifically. So much money, I'm wondering, is it going to be translate into infrastructure, or are they just gathering hordes of cash while they can? You guys have any opinion?
Well, I mean, I think that Facebook, a little bit of that is they've got to have some of the early guys cashing out, right? Or wanting to cash out.
Right, that's true.
Right, so there's a little bit of that going on, and I also think it's a little bit of their strategy, you know, executing on their strategy for, you know, maybe buying some game companies or producing some games.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, games are huge on Facebook, right? So,
right.
Maybe Zynga is going to be...
Maybe they're going to buy Zynga.
They need a lot of money to buy Zynga. Yeah. Well, they're printing money at Zynga.
Some of that money has certainly got to go to paying for the servers and the data centers that they all keep talking about. So, you know, you do need cash to get those things, unfortunately. Mm. It's not free yet. Anyway, so we'll hopefully get some more riveting stories later this month and as we get into the year. I don't think anything's major. Anything major, you guys, this year as far as cloud stories that you've seen, cloud computing-related stories? I haven't seen anything yet.
No, not yet.
I think the biggest one's just Heroku, right?
Yeah, which happened last year.
Right. That's right. Well, yeah, that's right.
Great. Well, let's get into the guest Q&A. Again, really pleased to have two of the founders here. And... first of all, I just want to cut right to the chase. Who is this Hoover guy that we see behind Loggly?
Hoover the beaver. Hoover's our mascot.
Okay.
He's a beaver.
Not a squirrel.
Not a squirrel. Like, some people thought he was a squirrel and some people thought he was a dog.
There are some famous squirrels on Twitter, but we won't go there.
Yeah, but he's a beaver, so beavers are very industrious. You know, they like logs, so we like logs, right? They work hard, they're friendly. You know, they're good little animals. So
is he here somewhere? I actually have a
beaver puppet that sits on one of the desks out front. So yeah,
good.
But he's ours. I mean, we had him drawn for us. So
very nice. Well, let's get into a little bit of your backgrounds and then talk a little bit more about Loggly. Give us, if you would, just a few minutes each on sort of your personal, professional backgrounds and sort of what brought you together to start Loggly.
Sure. So I'm originally from Oklahoma, and I owned a fairly large ISP there, so I'm a networking operations background from setting up a ISP. I did a couple of side projects, including one called Grub, which was a distributed web crawler, so familiar with web technologies and large-scale backends. And so I moved out here in about 2007 and went to work for a company called Splunk. Mm-hmm. Which does log file analysis, a piece of software you download. And previously I've done some Web 2.0 startups, like photo sharing site and stuff. So it just seemed to be a natural fit for my skill set. So
yeah.
I moved out here and live over above the hills of Berkeley and have a wife and two kids.
Love
it out here. It's fantastic.
Rafi, how about yourself?
Well, my background is IT security. I started out back in Switzerland, that's where I'm from, worked for companies like IBM Research, and then moved more into the log analysis space, worked for ArcSight, moved over to Splunk also, that's where Cord and I actually met. And at some point, Cord and I both left Splunk, And I had, for years, my interests kind of moved away into the security visualization world or data visualization. I wrote a book on the topic, and I've done some open source work. And at that point, I felt I was ready to start my own cloud visualization company. And I left Splunk, started investigating that, and realized, well, it's really hard to pull it off. The market is still not ready, I think. And that's kind of when Cord approached me. We kept talking after we left Splunk, and Cord was like, well, if you want to build this visualization thing in the cloud, you need a data store. And why don't we build a log management service in the cloud? And at first I was like, no, I'm done with logs. But then his persuasive arguments led me to consider it more, and we talked more about it, and that's how Loggly came about.
It's because logs are so exciting, right?
That's true. Yeah. They can be.
So tell us what you guys saw a couple of years ago. When the you started, was it a couple of years ago?
A year and a half.
Yeah. So tell us what you saw sort of up around that point, and then, you know, sort of what led to and now what is the core product that you have.
I think that kind of where we started was seeing the migration of web applications, apps in general, to more public cloud-based infrastructures. So, I mean, that's primarily Amazon. There are certainly other players today, but I started using Amazon back in early 2007, mm-hmm. AWS back in 2007. And I, you know, being an operations guy and having to have dealt with operational problems in the past, I just saw it and I thought, this is fantastic. This is the best thing since sliced bread, right? I don't have to rack a box and deploy the OS on it, and you know, it's so easy to use. And so, at the time when we first started talking about doing Loggly, it kind of like looked at the market and said, well, here's the deal: all these guys are moving to the cloud. They're building cloud services. They're building cloud apps or SaaS apps, if you will. And they're also using SaaS services to build these SaaS applications. So they're building their offering up with other SaaS offerings. And then there are other companies who are doing other things that are using SaaS offerings. And so the tendency is going to be toward not doing it yourself anymore, where if you deploy a box, you're letting Amazon deploy your infrastructure. You're going to let somebody else run your mail. So that means that most of the stuff in the stack that we're used to dealing with as operations guy, mm-hmm. we're probably going to give it to somebody else to do. And so we just said, well, logging makes sense there, and there isn't a hosted logging service. At the time, there was, I believe, only one or maybe two offerings out there that were similar to that. And we said what we could do is build a product that does that and has a nice API on top of it so people could build applications around that.
Yeah, it was definitely, we looked at, I mean, we both worked for like log analysis companies before, and they're the traditional product approach. And we said, well, it just from a cost perspective, it makes so much sense to move this into the cloud. And we're like, well, there is a market there. And if we try to address especially the cloud application developers, people that build apps on the clouds or maybe even on premises, if we can give them something cheap they can pay for as they go, that's something there is a market for that's not being addressed, because all these products are way too complicated to deploy in the cloud. And that's something that we, over time, I think we also committed more and more to, that we want to keep the service super simple. We don't want to build a complicated product where you need to have a PhD to operate it, right? We want everybody should be able to sign up, create an account, and in 5 minutes be able to send their data in and look at them. So making the log analysis problem accessible to everybody, really.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of the early adopters and first adopters of your service, and what were they doing before, and what are they doing now that they have the Loggly service in place?
The users are primarily people like us. So they're, you know, web developers developing applications to run in the cloud. So they're building SaaS apps. Mm-hmm. And they are typically have a little bit of operational background. But they're what we finally refer to as DevOps guys.
Right.
So they're developers who are also doing operational activities. Mm-hmm. That's who we're seeing using it today.
Right. And what were they doing before Loggly?
Well, if you have a cloud infrastructure, one of the differentiating things to an on-premise traditional software installations that you have these ephemeral machines. Like machines come up, machines go down. You actually also architect for that. And before you have anything like Loggly where you can centralize these things very simple, you either have to log in every box that you have, figure out first which months do I have, which ones are candidates for finding the solution to the problem I'm looking at. I log into the box, try to find the log files, just to realize that the hard drive ran over because I had too many log files. So it's all these headaches you have. Some people installed some kind of a central syslog server, but then you have to provision that machine, you have to monitor it, you have to clean it up, you have to have the tools to look at the log files there. So it's a hassle to do it yourself. Now you just send it to one central location and you can fire and forget.
Do you find it's a case of people not doing any logging, and now with you starting to do logging or doing sort of haphazard logging, and now they're getting more organized? Well,
it's probably
or doing
both.
More than they could before. How does it break out?
I think it's both, right? I think before, if you don't have a service like us, a lot of people start developing on one machine. They do their debug logging there. They do their troubleshooting on that one box, and then they deploy into production, and then they sort of forget about it until they have the first incident, whatever the incident is. It might be a performance problem or a security incident or availability issues. And then they're like, oh my God, where are the logs? And then they start trying to organize around it and try to tackle the problems from there.
The process of using your log files for various use cases that apply to you is it's a stepwise process. I mean, you end up, you know, far down the path, you may end up doing marketing analysis. You may end up doing conversion analysis on your customers, but you don't start by doing that with your log files. You start by trying to get all your logs in one spot and look at them when you push your code to make sure something's not broken.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, it starts out with something very simple, which is troubleshooting, trying to figure out a remedy to a problem that you had. Then later on, you realize that the logs contain information about what's going on with your business, and you start delving into it a little bit more. So it kind of evolves over time.
Gotcha. If I'm building a web service, cloud-based web service, is it possible or practical for me to send all my log data to you? How does that work?
It is. It's totally possible to send us all the data that you're collecting. Typically, in the cloud, if you're running on Amazon, and we're also running on Amazon, sending the data over to us is fairly trivial. It's free.
Because it's in the same data center.
It's in the same data center, essentially, right?
Does it have to be that way? Or if I'm doing an on-premise solution, but I want to take advantage of your service, I can send stuff to you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, average, we surveyed our customer base a few months ago to try to get an idea what their average volumes were. And we got an answer from anywhere from about 500 megabytes a day to 2 gigabytes a day. And it varies by use case to use case, and also company to company. Some companies log more than others. Some generate more logs. Some care about looking at certain logs more than others. So it varies widely.
Right. Am I responsible for determining and segmenting my logs to decide what I send to you? That's my job as a developer.
Yes.
And then I can decide to send you some or all of the information that I want.
You can pick and choose what types, the amount of logs and what types of logs you send to us. But you can send us all your logs. It's not a problem.
And we also see that people start with either infrastructure or like operating system level log files, and they get a benefit from that. And suddenly other people in the company come along and say, oh, what about if we enabled login on our applications, or we get that in as well? And it kind of grows over time as people see the benefit that the logs can actually give them. Right?
One of the things that we do is we apply a search algorithm to these logs as they come in. So we essentially make them searchable like you would search for web pages on Google. You can search your logs on Loggly. And so if in a typical deployment you were to go into 10 different boxes and look through 20 different files, it can be fairly tedious to find what you're looking for. In an old world scenario. Today, if you just take all of those log files and send all of them to us, and we don't care if you send them all to us, we're totally capable of handling that. You can then use search to solve the problem of narrowing them down and analyzing them.
And so search once across all the data.
Search once across all the data and narrow as you search.
So I'm sure there are dozens or hundreds of different use cases about where you can use logs, some that we are well known. What are some of the ones that are a little less known that sort of give us some thinking about the possibilities or things that you guys talk about in the office? Like, what if we did this? Wouldn't that be neat? Like the non-common log scenarios that might push the envelope.
I've done some crazy things with logs before. One of the things I do is I have a Skype client on my computer. And so every time Skype, I have a program called Growl on the Mac. And every time that someone chats in the Skype log, which is the company chat room, then Growl catches that event and then actually sends it to Loggly. So I have all of our chat logs going into Loggly, and I have it across a timeline. So I can type in, you know, the person I'm interested in. I can see how much they were talking, and I can run a report on who talked the most.
Right. But you could also look up something of like, I forgot the company that he mentioned or the thing last month, or
because it's timeline based, you can go back and say, I think that was like, you know, 3 days ago, and I can go back and look and pull all the, you know, the logs from that time frame with Loggly. Right. I can give it the time range and it can pull it back.
Yeah, give us another one, Rafi.
We have to hold all the phone logs. So we have IP phones. We have all the phone logs, so we know exactly who's calling who. Like, we know who's in the office. We look at our check-ins.
That's a little scary.
It is, right?
But it's also probably very appealing for some companies to have that level of visibility.
You know, we don't want to monitor what our employees are doing or what we are doing. It's people know that if they use the phone here in the office, then it's recorded. It's company property, right? If they want to make a personal phone call, they take their cell phones anyway. So,
right.
But it's interesting to kind of look at these things and you kind of break it down what's going on. Especially if you look at the source code check-ins, right? We can tell exactly when someone is actually working and when not. So
right.
you can see that they check in all the stuff at midnight, and then you look at the code quality and there's some interesting analogies you could draw.
Yeah,
I've. Been to a few conferences talking to people about their logs, and a guy came up to me a couple years ago in Las Vegas and was, you know, talking about his log files. And I said, well, you know, where are these servers that are generating your logs? And he goes, well, they're all over the United States. And I go, well, where are they, you know, located physically? And he goes, well, they're in wind turbines. And I'm like, wind turbines? And so this guy had thousands of servers, and each server was in a wind turbine out in a field somewhere, God knows where.
And he actually had an x86 server out there, or was it a little embedded thing?
No, it was a full-blown Linux server in each windmill, in each one with these wind turbines. And it was taking readings on, you know, power generation, temperature, you know, the tip of the blades, you know, which direction it was pointing. And all of this stuff was being transmitted back wireless, and, you know, it was all in log files. And so he was going to take those log files and analyze the logs to figure out, you know, wind patterns, you know, peak output, things
right.
like that, right?
Now there's a case with all these distributed points where it absolutely makes sense to use a hosted server. I mean, there's no reason why you wouldn't even consider it
at that
point.
Yeah, the data is, you know, you're not really concerned about the privacy of the data. The data is more important analyzed in aggregate, and it's all over the place, so you need to get it in one central location.
Yeah.
And you really only care about what happened, you know, maybe like the last week or so, right?
Right. Talk about that for a second, because, the logging, there's you know, that period of recency that's so critical, and you have some things that you do to help folks, you know, retain a certain amount of data, but then archive data. How does that timeline typically work in an average scenario?
It depends a little bit. I'm talking like a lawyer here. It depends on your use cases. So mostly the reason for keeping log files for a long time is compliance. When there's some kind of regulation that says you need to maintain the log files for so and so long, and that ranges anything from 30 days to 7 years in some crazy banking compliance requirements. Oftentimes, what you really want is for the last few days, let's say a week or two, you want the data available, everything, all the log files that you had, so that if something happens and you notice on Monday that something happened on the weekend, you can go back and maybe you compare it to the last weekend to get a kind of a baseline. And then further back than that, often it's enough to have aggregate statistics. So if you're looking for maybe you just aggregate things based on how many times did someone log in, or how many people hit the website. So kind of start aggregating things. You don't necessarily need the individual log records back then anymore, because you usually know what you want to look for in the older data so you can aggregate some stuff. But in Loggly, we actually, we keep whatever you send us, you can either, we can archive the data to an S3 bucket of yours, so you have the original log files as long as you want in your bucket available, and you can manage the retention time there yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you send it in to us, there's a certain retention assigned with the tier that you're on. It's typically 30, 90, 180 days that the data will be there, and then it just kind of rolls out.
Gotcha. Let's take a step up a little bit. I want to talk about cloud computing trends overall. When you guys started, and you talked about using AWS in 2007, or you know, cloud computing was at a certain state. It's changed dramatically every year. There's major improvements. What are the biggest improvements that have helped you guys build your business that weren't available in 2007 in terms of cloud services that are available now, or things that got better? Any examples there?
I mean, I guess some of the things we are using today that we haven't in the beginning is Amazon added more services like RDS, the database, so basically a hosted MySQL instance. For us, it's just nice to use that because you don't have yet another box you have to manage mm-hmm. and monitor and all that. It's just there, and it's redundant, it's fail-safe and everything. In the same vein, we used like Amazon load balancers, for example, another thing where you don't have to set up your own load balancer and configure everything. It's very simple to do that.
I was thinking like the speed of like network drives. I mean, like in general, S3
mm-hmm.
being able to provision an EBS volume, even though that when you first started, I mean, that was one of the first things that Amazon offered, but it's gotten really good since they did that. In fact,
so just the performance improvements,
the performance and the size of them now.
Improvements.
Yeah, you know, the size of the buckets has increased dramatically. So
yeah.
They've been making progressive improvements to it. So just in general, before they were pretty much unusable when they first launched, and now the speed of those volumes is crazy. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we care about that stuff because we're doing indexing. So we're loading these boxes, and we need a lot of bandwidth through to the hard drives. So
right.
I think another topic that's interesting that just in the recent months where Amazon is now capable of accepting PCI compliance. So their data center is now PCI compliant, which is fantastic for people that want to host credit card data on it. We don't do that. For us, it doesn't make sense to touch our credit card or cardholder data ever. We don't want to do that. But it just shows that security or compliance is really moving along in the cloud, and
right.
the cloud infrastructure is getting ready for those kinds of topics, which I think is really important. It makes people more comfortable also handing log files over to a third party or whatever data it is, right? And I think that's a very good development and definitely something we can benefit from.
Right. What's your take on the overall big data trend, and where does Loggly fit into that?
Well, I mean, it's the whole big data thing. There are all these tools and projects, and it's a humongous web of projects and efforts out there, and it's really hard to navigate that as an outsider, let's say. If you're not
yeah.
in this world, I mean, there are project names that are almost the same, and some of them are data stores, others are like job management tools. For me, it's all the time. It's hard to navigate this world again. And so what we kind of offer to the end user is we kind of bring order into this jungle of things by taking the most important projects and technologies out there. We put them together into a platform and then offer them to our users as a log management platform using a lot of these big data tools. That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
You know, certainly with big data comes scale, and you know, cloud technologies that are out there, like AWS is a good example of a service that's kind of cropped up that handles large amounts of data. I mean, you know, Hadoop, I mean, if you want to run Elastic MapReduce jobs on Amazon, it's very easy now to do that. I don't know if you saw that there was a guy like cracking passwords with AWS
running Hadoop.
Yeah, running
jobs.
Hadoop jobs on it, you know, it was like just spooling up all these servers and then shutting them down. I mean, so certainly that the tools have have been evolved to the point where it's much easier to deal with large amounts of data. But at the same time, the data is becoming more, spread out, right? So, I mean, mm-hmm. you've got multiple SaaS services that are generating large amounts of log files and large amounts of data, and you're uploading photos to Flickr, and you're doing your email on Google, and your stuff is all over the place, right? So one of the challenges is trying to track all of it and keep it all, you know, where it belongs, and
right.
and trying to manage it, right? And it's becoming a big challenge.
Yeah. Are there any big data tools, some of the projects that are part of your efforts or that you spend a lot of time with, whether it's Hadoop or some of the other
well-known
ones?
I mean, the biggest project for big data that there is probably Hadoop, right? And we're going to be running Hadoop jobs. So we serialize the data that comes into us. So the log data that comes into us is serialized so that it can be operated on by a Hadoop process. So a user can either start up a Hadoop job on us, or they can start up their own Hadoop job on, say, Elastic MapReduce, and be able to operate on that data that's stored in the S3 bucket.
To tie into their log data.
Right. And do the analysis that they need to.
I mean, right now we also use it in Membase. We're going to be using MongoDB as a column-based data store. So
I've heard a lot more about MongoDB recently. It mm-hmm. seemed like they weren't getting that much attention in the early days of the NoSQL and other big data boxing matches, but I they're sort of like going along strong, and I hear a lot more about them in the last 6 months or so.
It's the technology is good. I've been using it for a while, and it scales well. It's got redundant data stores, so they've really put a lot of thought into it, and it's stable, and it's also being adopted by a lot of Web 2.0 services. So those guys are also writing about it and contributing to the project as well. So
I think what is happening out there, and this is going kind of back to my earlier comment about the jungle of different technologies out there. I think with these whole new movements, there is a couple projects hitting the road that do very similar things, like CouchDB and MongoDB, and you have Membase now. And what happens over time is some of them will show that they don't really work. If you start using them and start applying them in more complicated environments, you suddenly see, they lack this feature, they have bugs. And so it kind of crystallizes itself which ones are actually working. And I think Mongo is probably a good example of something that just kept working well, whereas other technologies might have gotten more buzz in the beginning and just suddenly people realize it's not working. We have to have something that actually works.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the Hadoop, number one use case for Hadoop is log file analysis.
Yeah.
So you go in and you're like, I need this answer about my business, and then the guys are like, well, that's in the logs, so we'll go and run a Hadoop job on it. But then you run your Hadoop job, which is being run across multiple machines, it could be tens of machines or hundreds of machines, and the Hadoop processes themselves generate logs that tell you whether or not the Hadoop process just completed, doing what it was doing, which was analyzing log files. And so now you have hundreds of machines with Hadoop logs all over them that have to be then collected and analyzed in case something breaks, because it usually does when you're running a Hadoop job. So, I mean, even the analysis of big data generates yet even more data.
Logs upon logs upon logs, but that's why you guys are here.
That's why we're here.
We like it.
We love logs.
Tell us a little bit about the pricing model and how customers can get started, how that works.
So it's a tiered pricing model. We have a freemium offering. You can sign up on the web. We basically differentiate the tiers by the amount of data you send us by day. So if you send up to 500 megabytes a day, you're in the first tier. If you have up to 200 megabytes, it's actually even free. There's a couple features that you wouldn't get with the free account. It's a developer account where you have all the access to the APIs. So it's basically how much data you send, and it's from 500 to whatever 10 gigs you want to send to us per day.
And how long we keep it. So we found that people usually understand how much they're generating in day per logs, and they also kind of have a rough idea how long they want to keep it. So we built it around that.
Tell us a little bit about some of the product-specific things. I know you guys spent a lot of time thinking about your user interface as part of your company development. and I think it'd just be an interesting story for the audience.
Well, I mean, I've used, you know, multiple log management interfaces, anything from just using grep on the command line in the shell, you know, all the way up to full-blown GUI that is very specific about what it does with the results coming back. And one of the things that about log files is that you typically, if you have search capabilities and you have all your logs in one place, you tend to kind of noodle through them. So you can you kind of explore them, you know, kind of, you know, rummage around, if you will, in the log files, right? And you do that for several different reasons. Number one, you do it if something breaks and you need to fix it, you're going to rummage around in there and try to figure out what's in there that's relevant to fixing the problem. Second thing is you're going to just get in there and poke around and look at it in terms of, hey, what's going on with my network? What's going on with the product? You know, any of the logs that I've got coming in, it's just kind of interesting to look at those logs. You learn a little bit by just messing around with the logs.
Mm-hmm.
In both of those use cases, you really need to be able to look at the log lines themselves or histograms of those events occurring over time. So you really need a time chart, so like a stack column chart, and you need a text output so you can actually see the log files. And so when I thought about that and I thought about what the UI would look like in Logly, so instead of putting a search box up at the top and all the results below, I thought, well, what if you made it look like a terminal shell? So what if you allowed me to type something in down at the bottom and then I hit enter and then it just spewed all the results in and it just pushed it up in the browser stack and then put another prompt down at the bottom, just like a terminal. And so that's exactly what we did. And it works well because you can iteratively noodle through or rummage through your logs and then go back and look to see what you were doing earlier.
So at every page, I get another prompt where I could either continue to see what was happening or change my
term. Or refine your term, right? So just like a terminal where you're going to like type something and then it just pushes it up in the buffer, we do that with the browser. And we have a little bar at the top that lets you set context. So how, you know, what date you're searching on and what inputs you're looking for and things like that. But then also what's interesting is because it's a web browser, we can put graphics into the shell, if you will. So we call it the Logly shell. And you can put graphics in there. So you can do a timeline, and then you click on the timeline, and you get raw results, and then you can noodle around on those a little bit, and then you can do another graph, narrow your time range down. And overall, it's really fun to use it. I mean, logs are typically not that much fun, but it's actually kind of fun to get in there and dig around. And you can arrive at an answer pretty quickly, even dealing with hundreds of thousands of log files, log lines. It's pretty easy to get on it.
I think this is one of the examples, the shell of what I mentioned before also, which is we just want to make it really simple for the user to use this. And if you are a sysadmin or even if you're a developer, you probably have had a shell open at some point on your machine. You have typed tail in there or grep, and it's exactly the same in the Logly shell. You can do it. So we really try, and it's not easy always, to continue doing this, but we really try to keep the interface simple. We try to keep the features simple, and we have struggles here pretty much every day. But we're like, no, we got to make this simpler, or no, we have to kill this feature. And you will see this in every development organization. It's super hard to do it, but in the end, I think it really, really pays out. You make your architecture simple, and you make it simpler for the user to actually use these things.
I use the Twitter analogy all the time. We're like, you know, Twitter is 140 characters?
Right.
And that's it. That's all you can do unless you pay for your account. But so, I mean, that's a little bit like what Logly is. It's we have a very simple UI to get out and manage your log files, your events. And that's about it. The search language is actually pretty complex, and you can do some crazy searches with it and get back some interesting results. We also do this thing called faceting, where we will do occurrence counts of a full text string. So if you have 404 error, you can type 404 and ask for a facet count, and it'll give you back counts over time, over a time range you specify. That and the search capabilities are both available via our APIs. So you can take that and write your own application and put it on your own web page. So you can create your own use case, right? Or your own mashup with us to be able to do very specific things. But we try not to take specific use cases and implement them in our interface. I mean, it can cause clutter, and it's hard to reconcile certain use cases compared to other ones. We just want to be a very simple, easy-to-use service for managing log files. If you want to build something more complex, that's what the APIs were.
Got it. Anything else we should know about what's coming in 2011 or things we missed that you want to make the listeners aware of?
There's lots coming. bunch of new features, things like alerting. It's kind of the obvious thing to do. You want to, instead of always going and look for things that happen, you want to get an alert if it happens. You want to codify that. You're going to implement real-time tail so that you can actually really do the tail minus F in the shell and things stream to you. And then probably the biggest thing is that we're working towards is the application platform, so that we will publish more APIs on how to hook into Loggly. It's all RESTful APIs already. You can do searches, but you can also manage all of your objects with RESTful APIs, so that you can build your mashups against the Loggly platform, kind of using us like a database. Mm-hmm. And you can build your own visualization mashups or whatever it is. We'll have a bunch of examples of that we're going to publish fairly soon, probably, to show kind of what can you do by accessing your data in the Loggly store and doing some interesting stuff there.
Great. It's a lot to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot to do also.
A lot of logs.
I get to watch it. You get to do it. So yeah, exactly. For me. Well, thanks so much, guys. That is a great introduction to Loggly. Let's jump into the next section of the show. We'll talk about upcoming conferences. We've got the Strata conference coming early February in Santa Clara, the O'Reilly Group. Either of you headed there?
Well, I'll be there.
Okay, we'll see you there. Also, then in March, we've got the Structure Big Data Show hosted by the GigaOm folks in New York City. Either of you going to that one?
I know we're going to it.
Great.
I think we might actually be on a panel or something. I don't know.
Fantastic. So that's on the radar. If there are any other shows or meetups that the audience wants to share with the audience, please send it in, and we'll be happy to do that. We'll jump into Cloud Tips, where we give some favorite tips, recommendations, favorite companies, services, products. Cord, you want to start out?
Oh, man, I've got a ton.
Just give us one. Save the rest for the next time.
Oh, so I use a service called... There are a lot of them. I mean, we use probably at least 10 different SaaS services here. So I'm a big fan of all of
them. You can pick more than one if you want to pick
one. No, that's okay. So I use a service called Zerigo.
How do you spell that?
Zerigo. Zerigo. I-G-O.
Yeah, that's close enough. We'll put a link in the show notes.
So Zerigo is DNS hosting. So they essentially do... And testing. So they will monitor your website, but primarily the service they provide is providing DNS hosting. So even though that's kind of one of the very first SaaS offerings,
mm-hmm.
they provide a great interface for being able to manage your DNS records, and they have an API, which is really the killer bit, is that you can get in there and actually programmatically access that and configure it. So. Neat. Fantastic service, great UI, really friendly, and lots of features.
Well, one SaaS service that I use a lot is Unfuddle, which is a hosted SVN and track instance, basically. We have been using that here at Loggly since the beginning. Some people love it. Some people hate it because I track all the tasks that have to be done, all the tickets, all the feature requests, all the things we wish we had in there, and to not always the pleasure of the developers. That's kind of the tool that I'm using to get releases out. It's a fantastic service.
So
Unfuddle. So you don't have to host your own SVN or track stuff. It's all right there.
Good. Well, on the subject of tracking, I'm a big fan of Basecamp, which is from 37 Signals. I don't know if you guys use that
yep.
at all. Just a month or so ago, I downloaded an Android app called Beacon, which is not made by 37 Signals, but it's a third-party app. And so that's my pick this week, is an Android app for Basecamp called Beacon. And if you're a Basecamp user and you've set yourself a New Year's resolution to stay more on top of your Basecamp to-dos, and you have an Android phone, so now I'm down to a really small audience here for applicability of this cloud tip, but I have a lot of these, so it's hard for me to come up with them all the time. Anyway, my pick is Beacon, so there you go. Great. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. Really a pleasure. Why don't you give us information, each of you, if you want to share Twitter handle and or web addresses or Twitter handles for the company.
Sure. So Loggly's web address is loggly.com, and my Twitter handle is cordless, K-O-R-D-L-E-S-S, and Loggly's is Loggly, L-O-G-G-L-Y. You can follow up Hoover.
You can reach me best if you go to about.me/Raffy, R-A-F-F-Y. You have everything there, Twitter handle, websites, everything.
Nice, that's the first time somebody's given their about.me account.
Mine's cordless, so about.me.cordless.
You know, I just got to ask you, this is a little digression, so if folks want to tune out now, they can. But is, you know, we've went from the AOL keyword to the World Wide Web address to the Facebook and Twitter handles. Now we've got about, I mean, it just, it never ends, huh?
It doesn't. I know there's a lot, some people kind of raging about the whole Facebook / company thing, right? But you see that on ads all the time now.
Yeah, just like you used to see AOL keywords in
exactly.
The early days.
You remember in CompuServe, it used to be the, you know, the all caps.
Yeah.
But on the, like, I think you're right. You have all these different places to go and handles and accounts, but what I really like about me, it's such a simple service. You have your picture on there, you put your bio in, and you put all the links to your different social media places and your bio and whatnot. It's kind of getting that one place that I can give out now. I was trying to think what I'm going to give here, and I could give you my Twitter handle.
Yeah, the blog, there's the website and the Twitter and the link. It is a great service. I would, if people haven't taken a look at it, we can put that in as a collective joint tip. For about the they, you know, they launched and then they were acquired by AOL a few days later. They had a pre-launch, so my about.me address is GO.
Oh, nice.
That?
Oh, nice!
I got lucky.
We actually they're a sister company of ours with True Investors, and we actually started sitting in the same office developing our service, and they were sitting the next desk, so we know them really well. They're using Loggly too.
I think it's Geo. It might be Gario. I'll have to check. Shows you how much I pay attention to about.me. In any case, if any people want to reach me, I'm at Twitter at Gary Orenstein, and we also have a show account for the Cloud Computing Show on Twitter, just Cloud Show. We don't use that a lot, but we do announce all the episodes and cloud tips and some other things there, so that's a great place to get info about the show.
Awesome.
Thanks very much for joining us. Thanks to our listeners. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com. Or email us with any suggestions or feedback at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Just do a search for The Cloud Computing Show in the podcast directory, or click the link on the top right of our cloudcomputingshow.com website blog page, and that will take you directly to the iTunes store link. We'll see everybody next time. Take care. Bye-bye.